It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, where it's a nice and a cool. I mean, you'll look at your temperature thing, and we're in the 70s still. Ha! You know, I think Maine was warmer. So this is nice, as long as we can drag this out. You know, global warming hadn't hit us yet this year. One thing I wanted to go over today is I don't have a guest today, so you and I get to talk. And I want to encourage you to call in because there's a lot of issues going on. I'm sure I'll kind of leave it open today. A lot of times I don't take calls because we'll have an issue and one guest and I have them for an hour and I need to get what I need to get put in the archive and we got it. And, we'll go off in la-la land and different stuff that I won't get to what I want because it's my show, get your own show. So what we'll do today is go ahead and take calls, 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. And I'm going to be talking about, you know, something that is, we haven't really brought up a lot about my running for national chair of the Libertarian Party. And I want to share that with the morning audience because there is a lot of things that are going to happen over the next months based on a lot of stuff that you may not know. Today, important enough to me that I spend tens of thousands of dollars in making sure that this message gets out. There is a battle going on for your mind. Who's winning? Do you even know? Do you know how to measure? I've had a lot of conversations over the years and even in the last few days that have led me to believe that there is, we're gaining ground. You know, just teaching people to even ask the right question is an enormous advance. But a lot of people, as they start to come aware of what's going on, they're like, well, nobody knows. It's not the prevailing opinion. Prevailing opinion. That used to be used a lot when I was younger. And it's kind of a thing that keeps sticking, a splinter in my mind that keeps sticking there. They don't really say that much anymore. They just go, anybody that's not with the prevailing opinion, you just call them conspiracist. And I'm starting to realize, we're such predictable creatures. And if you know that, and you got a little playbook, you know, since the beginning of human history, and you're the priesthood or the royalty or the, you know, those that were educated and those that know and, you know, read Machiavelli's book or whatever, you kind of have a lot of this information available to you. And when you get in control of large media, you have the real popular court jester, you know, that will kind of put a spin on the king's whatever. You know, they're the other talk show hosts, or, you know, the cable news, you know, the court jesters. When you have that ability, what happens is you create an environment that you can mold the public mind. You can prepare them for things. You can make them numb. You can tell them what is and is not acceptable conversation. We're going to talk about that today. There's some really controversial issues that are avoided. I'm not going to avoid them, certainly not today. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here on the radio and Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com studios out of Phoenix, Arizona. The one thing that I wanted to make sure we went over today is that there's a future coming and nobody can do anything about it. And, you know, there's so many things that I'd like to just share with people. But what is the most important? I'll give you an example. This is what's going on. In 2004, in 2003, you know, February of 2003, I had sold my family pizza restaurant, gone on the radio at the request of a lot of people, and there were people that were willing to fund and sponsor to give me. We bought 2 hours drive time. It cost, I think, $6,000 a month for us to buy this airtime in a Scottsdale radio station in a major media market. 2 hours, they had an opening. Yeah, we'll take the money. Boom. We're on the radio. We promoted the crap out. We put signs everywhere. Yeah, as a libertarian on the radio, morning drive, 2 hours on your way to work. Oh, my goodness. How the heck did that happen? No, you pay for it. The answer is always yes. It's just how much. So we did 13 weeks. Before we went into war, we knew that we were going into war. There was nothing to stop these guys. We're going to war with Iran. I mean, Iraq. Now, eventually Iran. That was one of their goals. And then you go, we're going into Iraq. What are we going to do? Well, let's get a libertarian on the air and give the libertarian perspective, and not what a Republican or Democrat says a libertarian perspective is, or what the media, the lamestream media, the media so last century has to say about it. Let's get someone we can trust, a libertarian that, you know, won't compromise and kind of, you know, hit it head on and no fear and challenge the cult of the omnipotent state kind of thing. We'll do that. 13 weeks, 2 hours a day, every morning. Morning drive, and we're going to traffic with Danny Sullivan. Go ahead and just get the tax slaves to work. Danny, you know, and they have a traffic person. They go all mad about that. Well, you know, hey, you don't get plugged. You just do it. You just get them to work. Get tax slaves to work. Get them to work. And so we had the weather and, you know, this news, and we went through the whole thing. I was the morning show. Well, what happened is after the 13 weeks, we had done what we initially set out to accomplish. Back then, people, internet, what the heck's internet? This 2003, they were just starting to realize there was such a thing, certainly in politics and in the media. And we had already started to archive them in MP3s, you know, or we'd use Windows Media File there for a little bit, and then we went to MP3, what the heck is MP3? A lot of people don't understand. Let me explain, you know, some of the technology and how this stuff works so you can understand what we're dealing with. When you watch a cartoon, you're not seeing it. It's like when you do a video camera, some of the high-end video cameras, they can set, you know, how many frames per second. Generally, you're looking at like 24 frames a second. So 24 frames a second, that's a lot of frames. I mean, you make, you know, they little move, you get the, your brain kind of fills in the blanks and you get movement, a great movie. Yeehaw. Well, how many frames do you have to be able to have a smooth movie, you're communicating the information, or what is it that the eye can't catch the difference? So let's say you have 100 frames a second, 24 frames a second. Does the brain really see something different? You know, probably not. You get down to, you know, I mean, half of that, say 12 frames a second, you're probably going, yeah, it's a little cartoony, it's a little, you know, choppy or something. There is a point at which your brain goes, I'm not making the clean, you know, connection here. And a lot of times you'll see you're watching a YouTube, or you have a slow computer, or you don't have enough RAM in your computer. All of a sudden you might get this kind of choppy stuff watching a YouTube or something. Well, sound, they did the same kind of thing. Like when you're watching a cartoon, you watching Bugs Bunny, you may have only, 10 frames in a second or something. I mean, I was throwing that out of my head. I don't know. But you got so many frames, and they put them together, and you get the movement. Well, at a certain point, you get to a point to where your brain can't tell the difference between, because there's only so much information it can take. When you're listening to sound, that was anybody that was a big audiophile back in the 70s and so on, you have LP records, the vinyl records, and you know, how light can the needle lay on and get in the groove, you know, how great and wonderful. Then it won't do, so you're putting a penny on it and just, you know, scratching the crap out of the groove, you know. But the high end arms would just be just enough to kind of the needle float in that groove. Well, it can only hit the peaks in that scratch in that vinyl as fast as it can vibrate, you know, from the peak to the trough, back and forth. Well, some of the peaks it would miss because it wasn't digital. I mean, you were going analog. You were just whatever it could actually read. Well, you get lighter and lighter needles. You get to a point to where the human ear can't really tell the difference. That was where they were trying to go. Well, when you went to digital, and you go digital tape, cassette, or you go to digital play, a lot of these things were recorded digitally. You know, even back, you know, decades ago, and now they're re-released in digital, you know, release of, you know, fill in the blank group. What that means is now you've converted all these sounds, you know, these highs and lows into ones and zeros. You know, it's digital. It's computer talk. They go, this symbol, you know, you can make out much clearer. The symbol resonates longer and so on. If you start to chop that up, you start to lose that. To what point? I'm going to show my ignorance here, but when we save files that we record, we have the option to put it in, you know, a WAV file into an MP3. An MP3 is like picking cells of a cartoon. You're not taking all the information because your brain can't process all the information. But at what point can it? All right, well, they have options. As I look on my editing software here for when we put up our archives and so on, I'm given options. How many hertz do I want it? What's the frequency? The kilobytes per second, you know, of information that's going to be in each second. If I do stereo and I do 64 kilobytes per ear, that's 128 kilobytes of information, 64 in each ear, that is CD quality, okay? That is as much, I mean, you can put out, you know, the greatest, most wonderful symphony of De La whatever, and even though that's a much smaller file than the full recording of an analog of all the sounds and everything, that's all that my human ears can pick up on average, I would imagine. So 64 kilobytes per second, 44,100 hertz, you know, blah, blah, blah. This information that goes into my head is a fraction of what it would be had I did the whole recording in, say, a WAV file. So I can take, 100 megabytes of information, compress it down into, say, a fifth of that, 20 megabytes. If I go to 32 per ear, down to 64 kilobytes per second in mono, you know, like AM radio, they're not stereo normally, then you're at you know, talk show AM radio about as much as it can go out that you can hear. So then you're down to, like, say, 10 megabytes per second. So when you listen to the archive of this show and you click on that file, the smaller that file, the faster it downloads. Then they go, oh, that's such a big file, man. Do you really have to have it that big? You know, or, you know, that loaded pretty quickly. So what is the option here? We're looking at, can we get the full amount of information that you have a quality listening experience, oh my goodness, and I can play it again later, and it sound as good as what you're hearing now, and we have an archive, and I can just do a rerun or play or something, or the network can do whatever. So all these bits of information come in at how, what quality we would save the file at. When we started doing this, nobody even heard of this. It didn't even cross their mind that you can take all this, you know, enormous amounts of information that is a radio show, and put it on servers that then people can go and look back and listen to this stuff. You know, 7 years ago, we're going, look, here it comes, and then separate it by category, by guest. You have all that information available. Well, we recorded every word that ever came out of my mouth on the radio. But the reason we were able to do that is for a couple of things. One, memory storage started getting really cheap. You know, you could, you know, before it would take, you know, cost a lot of money to get, you know, now it's just memory is nothing. You know, I mean, it's just, right, I just bought a video camera for my daughter-in-law and my son's birthdays. They're close together. So we all pitched in and we bought them a nice camera, but it doesn't have digital tape anymore. There for a while, they went to hard drives, but they were kind of fragile if you drop it or something like that, and you get a lot of time. Now, it's just like memory keys, you know, just flash memory that's in these little cameras. You know, it's a $600 camera, but it's the size of like a, you know, a camera, you know, a digital camera. It's just almost nothing. And they get, on slow play, you can get up to 50 hours of video, one little handheld Canon camera. 50 hours. There's so much coming. And this technology, I want to explain to you a little bit more what it means in the fight for liberty. But you need to understand it. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
It's Mission Possible here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. You know, I want to make sure you understand the technology that's being used, because it's going to play such a large part in the transfer of information from individuals' minds to yours. Now, this is it's been a leap in technology that has made some of the most important information available to more people across the planet than ever before. I mean, it's like the Gutenberg press. All of a sudden, you can mass print Bibles. You're not going to have your own monk that's going to take a year to transcribe an entire Bible with the nice swirlies around the edge. You know, that, ooh, I got me a handwritten Bible. You know, how much do you think that's worth back then? How many people you think had it? It was an instrument of control by the church. You know, this guy had it. You want to know what it says? Ask him. And I guarantee whatever the Pope wrote down and sent to him, that's what he'd be saying. It said. That was the revolution in the church with Martin Luther, the Lutherans. When Martin Luther had the, you know, he's reading the Bible and they start able to print the Bible and give it to the masses, the Bible, and saying, look, man, you know, you can read this yourself. You know, they're saying this, and it says this. What up with that? Well, what do you think the church did? Going around killing them? Oh, heck no. You're not allowed to say what anything says and what we tell you it says. You know, it's always been about control. And the threat to their control is always the truth, information. Who gets to be the sentinel of information? Who is that person? The government? Mandatory youth indoctrination camps, known as the public school system. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to make sure that you understood some of the basics of the technology and how it's going to be used, how I'm going to use it, and some of the controversy that I plan on creating. And you guys get to know that. When you started, we start doing video and audio to where we can compress it so that it is available on the internet. For the first time, all of a sudden, you start to see, back in 03, we started seeing it back in the mid-90s. We knew this was coming. In fact, it took longer than I anticipated that it would take before we got to where we are now. I was, and a lot of it has to do with government and stuff, you know, they're always slowing everything down. But the inevitable march towards the ability of popular in my day was the movie Wayne's World. Wayne's World, Wayne's World, party on, excellent. Okay. This was a skit that was done at Saturday Night Live about two guys, Mike Myers and the other guy, I can't remember his name, Dana Carvey. They were in a basement playing, you know, the long-haired dude, man, what up? One guy's playing guitar, the other guy drums, and they're just sitting there going on about whatever in their little cable access thing. What I understood is that ability was coming to where every kid on the planet was going to be able to be accessible to every other person on the planet And all it took was they had something that they wanted to watch or listen to. All of a sudden, you get a million hits on, you know, cat videos. So when the young man came out with Loose Change, the 9/11 documentary that this kid Jason Burmes did in, I guess it was 04, 05. When he came out with that movie, I knew what was going to happen. The accessibility to that, they just started doing YouTubes, all this kind of stuff. We're like, yep, we're bringing on Freedom's Phoenix. We've been waiting for a decade for this to get to where you could do video on the internet. A lot of people don't know, he's had over 100 million downloads of that movie just on the internet. 100 million. That's like a lot. It's a third of the population of America, of the United States. So I'm going, okay. So information is being transferred. When we came on in 03, it was very much on the tip of the spear. There was no libertarians on the radio, certainly not in a major media market, and sure as heck not every day, and sure as heck not every day in a major media market in morning drive. You know, news, weather, and traffic. That just, heck no. Where the heck that come from? We would pick for 2 hours a single issue. It'd be Social Security this day, war the other day, and, whatever next day. You know, Second Amendment, fully informed jury. I mean, you pick it, we would just go get a couple of experts on it, and we'd just, hammer it. Because we wanted to get the whole charge of me doing this, the whole reason for me going on the radio and doing that, was to get the libertarian perspective on a particular issue that was unfiltered and unbiased and all of a sudden from other people. I mean, of course, we had our bias, but that was the point. You know, this is what we mean by fill in the blank and then the drug war and why and yada, yada, yada. After 13 weeks when we did that, okay, contract's done. We did it. We raised it. Okay, let's go, on to the next thing and, get a real job. Well, the radio station was owned by a Jewish guy in Scottsdale that was part of a large family that owned part of the Detroit Pistons. And this was kind of, this particular member of the family, that was his thing. Here, you got your radio station, you get to have your national show, you get to go over there and Scott, you get, go on with you, okay? Well, there was something interesting that happened. They wanted me to interview selected individuals, which we did. It got more popular, and we'll talk about it when we come back. I want to tell you the history, because there's a future.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father.
Yeah, let's bring some loving here today. How are you going to do that? Without truth, you can't have love. And you sure as heck can't have trust. So I'm going to try and bring a little bit of truth, trust, love, give you a little history, because we're building up to some goodies that's coming. When I was on the first station I was on, it was KXAM. It was a main radio station here, morning show here in Phoenix. Everybody was excited that we got to give libertarian perspective out there and so on. And it was owned by a Jewish gentleman. I think he finally sold the station, converted it, donated it, or something. I think his wife is Catholic, and they made it into a Catholic thing or whatever. I don't care. That's not the point. What happened was is that he wanted his family, their glaziers. They do like the glass at the Bellagio in Vegas. They were big in the glass industry and owned part of the Detroit Pistons, and they had some money. So it wasn't like the radio station was ever in threat of going out, and it was kind of the project of the son. One of the sons of children there basically, and he was in his 60s probably, but, you know, that's like, you know, his thing. You know, you're gonna, we've got all these industries out there. Everybody's in some industry of whatever. Like, we got somebody in the media, okay? They got their own radio station. So they're doing this, and it was kind of interesting. They didn't really see what was coming when I came on. And I remember the promos for the first week before I came on. We're just getting into Homeland Security's coming and all that kind of stuff. And it was right before we went into war with Iraq. You know, we had yet to go into war. So the promos for my show is like a friend of mine had a really good shtick and German accent. And he goes like this. He goes, "Ich bin Helmut from the Office of Homeland Security. We recommend that you do not listen to the Ernest Hancock show. Declare your independence. They'll know if you're listening." You know, that kind of thing, right? So we were doing that, and we're having fun. And all of a sudden, like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't want this German stuff on my station. They were like, "Hey, man, you know, we're Jewish, man. We don't want this Nazi thing going on." And we're going, "Yeah, but that, I mean, you understand the point." "Well, I don't care." "All right, fine." So we got it out anyway. Well, what happened as I'm on and it becomes popular and the phones are ringing and we're just, you know, having a good time, what they did is they said, "You know, well, you need to get the Israeli perspective. You need to have absolutely, man. Bring it on." Well, there was a gentleman. He was the VP of Zionist of America or something. And he was an attorney in Scottsdale. So they're recommending that I get, well, bring the boy on. Let's do it. Bring it on, bring it on, bring it on, bring it on. So go to my old archives, and you'll see, and I've had him on Charles' show before for 2 hours. We were arguing back and forth. Going, get along fine, but he definitely had his perspective. Well, how do they come up against? That's why when I have Heidi Byrick from Southern Poverty Law Center on, asking her this question that I asked him. I ask anybody that's talking about foreign policy and spending money on Israel. I go, I got to know two things. One, what the heck does anti-Semitic mean, okay? Get their definition. Well, if you're what? I mean, you know, so a lot of times they can't even define it, but it's what they really mean is that you're not, you know, advocating for giving the United States tax dollars to Israel. That's what it comes down to. So you got to get them to say it, you know, how or in their roundabout way. And a lot of times they just don't. Well, you know, you can't be anti-Jew or whatever. So I go, okay. So I go, am I anti-Semitic, anti-Israeli, anti-Jew, anti-whatever, if I advocate that I get to keep my freaking money? They don't get to put a gun to my temple, take my money and redistribute it to, you know, any other country, including Israel. I mean, you know, Egypt, Jordan. Now, of course, they will say, "Oh, yeah, yeah, you shouldn't do them that." Yeah, but Israel's different. Okay, pray tell, why is Israel different? Well, because it's not. I mean, they come up with, I'm not even sure. Well, we need it's like a big giant aircraft carrier in the Middle East. Yeah, it's our base. It's you. Yeah. And as time goes on, you start to realize that, you know, the United States is Israel's army, not the other way around. So I'm going, okay. So I don't need to get into all that. I don't care. I'm just, you know, can I not be forced to fund them? And then they turn around and use the money to buy more congressmen to get more money. I mean, you know, this is, and this isn't just there. I mean, it's other, you know, Turkey was doing it. Heck, there were, you know, a lesbian relationship with a congressman. Sabelle Edmonds is sitting there listening to these tapes. She's fluent in several languages. That's the FBI whistleblower. She comes out, and that's what the whole point. She's going, look, there's like a shadow government going on here with deals on this and bribery of congressmen using any weakness or perceived PR kind of what it means. I mean, dang, had her on the show. So I get an understanding if I bring him on and we'll have this conversation. Well, he just makes my point even more. So we're nice, you know, to each other. He's been on several times. I don't care. I'll get him on again. But, you know, what did we learn? That Israel's to be treated differently. Didn't you know that? Oh, okay. Why? See, that's why principle is so important. That's why when we, you know, like I have Frosty Wooldridge to talk about immigration, when he start going on about numbers, I don't care. Numbers don't, what did I gotta have my notebook and pen and calculator and go and check, you know, yeah, I give you another number. Now what? You know, we have all of, you know, he was going on about oil. Oh, we got to have the oil. Now, I tell you what, politics about oil is going to change a lot with this spill in the Gulf. You know, then what? And, you know, how did it blow up? Why did it blow up? Who blew it up? What was it? I mean, we don't know. We'll never know. You know, maybe we will. Doesn't matter. You know, this is the alternative to all of this, these problems with oil and so on, is just quit subsidizing it. You know, let the other energies compete on an equal foot instead of having wind and solar going out, you know, begging for their subsidy. Just, you know, stop with all the social and economic engineering. This stuff works it out, especially when you have property rights, especially when you have somebody on the coast that's damaged by British Petroleum having the oil wash over their, you know, their dock and their home and make their nice, white, shiny yacht dirty. They got something to say about it. Or you destroy fishing, or you destroy somebody's recreational beach, or you destroy somebody's land. You know, that's where the proper role of government comes in, defend property rights. Somebody is made to be whole. Well, what happens? No, they've got some kind of treaties and funds and this and laws and limits of liability and all this other stuff to where they're going to come out fine. The people that get the oil washed up on the shore, they're getting screwed. Well, what's the freaking purpose of government? Defend individual rights, including property rights. All right. So how's it working out? So I these issues, I am not afraid. You know, bring them on, bring them on. You want to do Israel, you want to do 9/11, you want to, you know, there's always a core, proper role of government in all of these. So I have them come on. Well, after that, they're like, you know, the contract's up, and they go, you know what, we'll cut it in half. You know, if you'll stay another 13 weeks, okay. Then another station, you know, the 50,000 watt that went, you know, all over the state and into Mexico and, you know, half the Southwest, one of the old 50,000 watt Liberty blowtorch asked me to come on, and they wouldn't charge me for free. Cool. All right, fine. We'll do the freedom thing. Then it got to where, okay, well, I'm done with this. I got to get like a real, okay, we'll pay you. Really? Okay. You know, we'll go a little bit longer. So it just kind of progressed into having, you know, this perspective, this rhetoric out there, even though they weren't going to promote it. I mean, they wouldn't be out there, even though you're drive time or something, they're just, yeah, we're, you know, we don't want to put, like, we're in favor of this. We like the fact that it's popular. We like that it's bringing people over. We like that it increases ratings. We like that it, you know, is benefiting the other shows that we have. We like that part. But, man, you know, gosh darn it, do we have to, like, spend money on it and put it out there that we, like it? Yeah, maybe not. Which I, you know, was surprised I got as much support as I did, you know, from these guys. So I was like, cool. What was unique? What was the difference? What was it that made it to where it was popular? You know, there was new things. It was uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. I mean, it was just, you know, this is what's really going on. This is what's happening. This is who's behind it. This is what's doing it. I mean, and technology allowed that to happen. For the first time, you were able, instead of waiting for the monk to transcribe and write, and it takes forever, you know, to do a Bible, you were able to just get a mass produced off a printing press for, you know, something you could afford. Or heck, somebody might even just, you know, give it out as, you know, support for whatever the heck they were doing. Put a little ad in the front of the Bible or something. Yeah, don't laugh. They do. Then you have the opportunity to do the same with books on tape. All of a sudden got cassettes out there. I'm driving around. I'm filling my time. Then you have some people that can download entire books onto their Kindle. You can have many books, 100 books, on their little screen. They go around. I see them at the airport all the time. These guys just reading books. They just get the book down, you know, digitally. They start reading it. Do it on your laptop. Then you have people that can, they can download multiple movies and compress them on one DVD. It's getting to the point now. There is new technology. It was about a year and a half ago I started reading about in the science magazines and starting to come online, that they have what they call holographic DVDs. How you store information is just ones and zeros. I mean, it's how tight can you make the ones and zeros? How thin, you know, is the laser that encodes the information? What about the strata that receives the information? You know, is it silicon chips? Is it, I mean, it's getting to the point to where the limitations on the size of computer chips is not based on anything other than, you know, the width of the laser. You know, how tight can they get it? You know, how wide is an electron? I mean, you know, it's just, it's, you know, it's getting to where we're just getting down the physical properties. They start going to, you know, to quantum memory, you know, whatever the heck that means. And then they're going into three-dimensional. Instead of having a two-dimensional chip, they're going to go to, like, imagine chips stacked up. And then what, you keep doing that with silicon, what do you have? You have a big crystal, like Superman's green crystal in the movie, you know, Superman. You know, you just have all the information, all of Krypton in your hand in one crystal. Think I'm kidding? Just a DVD now with holographic three-dimensional. You have lasers not just going straight down, but at, you know, from different sides and an angle, can go in multiple layers underneath the, you know, blah, 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 blah. More information, that's all it means. Right now you have 4.5 gigabytes of information on one DVD disc, you know, to have movie information. If you go Blu-ray, you get, I don't know, I think it's 20, 30 gigabytes. You get more information. It's clear. You get more information. So I'm going, okay, well, you know, that's a lot. A lot. 30 gigabytes on one disc, that's a lot. Well, that means you have to have 1,000 gigabytes to have 1 terabyte. They are now in 3D discs able to put 100 terabytes on one disc. In full resolution, without compression, imagine DVD movies at 4.5, divide that into 1,000. I don't know, what is that? You know, 250 movies, full-length movies on one disc. The entire MGM, you know, movie collection on two discs. You see my point? And it's going to get more. What happens when you're able to get every single freedom-oriented information, Power of Nightmares by the BBC, Century of Self, BBC, Loose Change, 9/11 stuff, you know, Fabled Enemies, you know, the people in the terror, where they came from, and I watched that this weekend. That was way better than I thought it was going to be. Invisible Empire, all Alex Jones stuff. A bunch of stuff from the 40s, 50s, cartoons, everything that has to do with just how the times, the information that's available to us on one disk, one chip, one memory key, and in the envelope, on the back, a stamp on the back of a postcard, and it's just read in your computer. I mean, do you see what I'm talking about? It's like the Gutenberg Press and the Bible and Martin Luther. It will have that kind of a revolution. It's already started. So I have an opportunity now running for national chair at the Libertarian Party to communicate with all. I have the database. You know, they provide this when you're running for office. To communicate with every delegate to the Libertarian National Conventions of 04, 06, 08, and I just got it from up to this Saturday, of the people that have registered for the 2010 convention. Now, when you scrub these against each other and don't have duplicates and households and husbands and wives living in one place, I would imagine it's going to be at least 1,000-2,000 people. So I'm going, okay, so let's say it's that we'll have the total today. I just sent in the final list and we'll see what it comes out to. But so let's say 1,000 people. 1,000 people that have made up in convention the Libertarian Party. Both sides, you know, some, you know, we need to be more moderate, some we need to be more radical, whatever. The prime directive is we, the members of the Libertarian Party, here, I pulled it up, we, the members of the Libertarian Party, challenge the cult of the omnipotent state and defend the rights of the individual. That's the first statement of premise. That's number one. This is the first, you know, hello, here's the libertarians, okay? We hold that all individuals have the right to exercise sole dominion over their own lives and have the right to live in whatever manner they choose, so long as they do not forcibly interfere with the equal right of others to live in whatever manner they choose. Governments throughout history have regularly operated on the opposite principle, that the state has the right to dispose of the lives of individuals and the fruits of their labor. Even within the United States, all political parties other than our own grant the government the right to regulate the lives of individuals and seize the fruits of their labor without their consent. So you can see from the beginning, this is early 70s, statement of principles, can't change. 7/10, 7/8 in convention have to vote to change this. It's never going to change. But are we doing it? And what would you communicate to the members? Think about it. If you could, what? We'll talk about it when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, satisfy me with a little bit more or something. You know, give me some, what? I don't know, truth, justice, and what used to be the American way. Let's start with something like that, maybe. You know, you're looking at the photo gallery. There's on Freedom's Phoenix, one of the shows, the top stories today is in Greece, what's happening there. And there is a, you know, there's an upheaval going on that probably got a lot of people scared, a lot of people worrying, a lot of people maneuvering. You don't know how much is being maneuvered on what side of who to do and accomplish what. But, you know, there's going to be scenes of firebombs and Molotov cocktails and police and kicking and screaming and yelling and whatever. And there will be something that will come out of it on the other end. What? I don't know, but they're going to justify whatever it is. So I'm worried because I don't see any reason why not that's going to come to America. The only thing that I can see that would alleviate that would be the expression of the people to be clear in what it is, because that's all it's about. It's about attention. You know, I want, you know, this is my say. You know what my say? You're not listening? Okay, here's a firebomb. You know, I'm going, you know, is that really, now we're listening about what? You know, so I see truth and information as a counter to a lot of this stuff. Well, there was a people did also in the early 70s. We were in Vietnam. You know, Tricky Dick Nixon gets in there. He's creating all kinds of more government wage and price controls and OSHA and EPA and all kinds of government, you know, programs and we're, yeah, just stuff, increasing bombings. And you know, it's like, you know, Obama doing Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Yemen. You know, they're going Laos, Cambodia, and North Vietnam. I mean, you know, it's just same kind of crap. During that time, the Libertarian Party starts, and what does it say? We're going to challenge this. I mean, did they really think that they were going to, you know, all of a sudden they're going to win the office, they're going to be? That was not the point. But they got more and more popular. Now people want to use it to become a I don't know, a wing of the Republican Party or something. We, the members of the Libertarian Party, challenge the cult of the omnipotent state and defend the rights of the individual. We hold that all individuals have the right to exercise sole dominion over their own lives and have the right to live in whatever manner they choose, so long as they do not forcibly interfere with the equal right of others to live in whatever manner they choose. Governments throughout history have regularly operated on the opposite principle, that the state has the right to dispose of the lives of individuals and the fruits of their labor. Even within the United States, all political parties other than our own grant the government the right to regulate the lives of individuals and seize the fruits of their labor without their consent. We, on the contrary, deny the right of any government to do these things and hold that where governments exist, they must not violate the rights of any individual, namely the right to life. Accordingly, we support the prohibition of the initiation of physical force against others. Two. The right to liberty of speech and action. Accordingly, we oppose all attempts by government to abridge the freedom of speech and press, as well as government censorship in any form. And three, the right to property. Accordingly, we oppose all government interference with private property, such as confiscation, nationalization, and eminent domain, and support the prohibition of robbery, trespass, fraud, and misrepresentation. Since governments, when instituted, must not violate individual rights, we oppose all interference by government in the areas of voluntary and contractual relations among individuals. People should not be forced to sacrifice their lives and property for the benefit of others. They should be left free by government to deal with one another as free traders, and the resultant economic system, the only one compatible with the protection of individual rights, is the free market. What part of that do you not agree with? Even the right to life is discussed amongst libertarians as to include the unborn if you believe life begins at conception. That's why libertarians say, look, you can use libertarian principle and be pro-life or pro-choice. They don't take a position on that because it uses the same basis.